Shoot ready.
Yep.
Shoot ready. Stand by.
Shoot ready.
Stand by.
Shoot it. Are you ready? Stand by.
Shoot ready.
Stand by.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Shooter, Are You Ready podcast. I'm going through the emails on my phone like an unprofessional host, and there is a nine-minded raffle going on right now for anybody who's looking for night vision, because that's how your boy won some. $65. You could be a winner. Anyways, welcome to the Shooter, Are You Ready podcast. I'm happy to have you here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for downloading, streaming, whatever, watching. Wholeheartedly appreciate it. But enough about that. Paul, what is up, buddy?
Are you in the raffle for?
I was debating on it. It just went live.
I don't know.
It is 8 p.m. on a Friday. Paul, jump in. You could win.
If I
can do it, you can
I want to. I want to do it twice, and then once I lose twice, I'll have it out of my system. But otherwise, it's one of those where I'm always kind of like sitting back, thinking about like, oh, what could be? Dude. It's very interesting to me. Because like at a certain point, you're probably just better off like, hey, every Friday, I'm going to transfer $60 out of my bank account into a separate account.
Yeah. Okay. And then, Tommy, you know,
and then after, you know, 2 years, you'll have enough saved up for it or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's kind of what it.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. Buying nods is cool, but winning a pair.
Dude, winning is.
Feels so much better. Winning feels so much better than paying cash.
So before we get into the meat of what this episode is going to be, which
we
is,
never get into the meat.
Thunder. No, we really
it's
don't.
It's always the appetizers.
We always eat our way around it. And it's just like, ooh, a little potato salad. What about a potato ole? We never actually get to the actual thing. But we would. So night vision, I always thought of is kind of like, okay, it's kind of silly to want.
Yeah.
Like how often are you actually going to use this? And then as part of Thunder on the Tundra, there was a night shoot where it was kind of like show up. You could see kind of like what our buddy Tony from VC Optics was running. He had some really cool things that were out there too. Like he had some, it was like pre-ed or it started with a P, but they were like thermal scopes and some night vision scopes that were there. And they were digital and they were incredible. I mean, we were looking out into the distance and I was making shots at 200 yards with these things. You could record your phone. It was really fun.
Digital. Recordable, affordable, Paul.
Ooh, okay.
Damn, right?
New sponsor.
Tony. You're welcome, Tony. You know, use that one.
But like Tony, super gracious. He was just like, hey, man, like you don't have nods. Come on over here. Why don't you put these on?
Yeah.
Because earlier this year at Mitten State, I want a full power laser. And I didn't really know what it meant to have a full power laser compared to kind of some of the down-tuned lasers that you'll find in the civilian market.
Right.
And then I was like, man, I don't know if this thing is on. And somebody was like, somebody off to my right, and I don't know who it was, but they were just like, yeah, you know, it seems a little weak and things like that. And then a laser beam shot out of my gut, the craziest one, like movie laser beam.
Yeah.
Lightsabered the thing at 200 yards. And I hear from down the line, yeah, that's the full power bastard over there that's just popping off. Yeah. I mean, just washed out everybody else's. And I was like, holy shit. Okay, I'm the guy, right?
Yeah.
But eventually, Tony was actually going to like work on selling those off to somebody else. But John, one of our buddies, was standing behind me, and he does have a PBS-14 night vision. And he was just like, hey, man, let's see if we can walk this in on steel at 200. And I was like, dude, I can't see. And he was like, I'll be your eyes. So I've got the laser on, hip firing. And he was like, little up, little left, little left, little more left, little down, little up. Okay, fire. Boom. Five shots back to back, 200 yard steal. The last three, I just had my eyes closed. I was just like, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. I had the same thing with Sho. I had the KP9 out there, and eventually Sho's like, left, left, a little higher, aim right over the left shoulder. And then next thing I know, dude, ping, ping, 200 yards with a 9mm. And I was like, look at me go. I'm basically a pro. I'm putting this down.
Dude, that was obviously really, really fun that we could do that, especially kind of at that distance for what's out there. But that was something that really did convince me to like start trying to pursue getting some kind of night vision optic sits out there.
Yeah.
But the thermal was really, really cool too.
Oh yeah.
Like thermal, I think is kind of the real deal.
My boss, who's not my boss, who he probably doesn't listen to this because he made a suggestion and I got a little lippy with him and he said he wasn't subscribing. So I don't know if he actually did unsubscribe and he doesn't listen, but anyways, he's been on me to get some thermal so I can go coyote hunting with him. And I really want to, like, bad. So like now that Tony's got that, I'm like, I think I could get that. And then
that would be the one to do. Yeah. I was really, really impressed by that. And also, like, it's cool that you can see in the night, but having an optic or like a flip or something like that, where it's like, no, there's something here.
Yeah.
And like, you should draw your eye and focus in on that. I think that that's like the next step, and it's just going to keep getting better and better and better. And
100%.
It's going to start. And also, I mean, these things were like sub 1,000.
Yeah. I think 900, 950 or something was the price on those.
And
I mean, okay, let's be honest here.
We're pretty nice.
Not kicking Tony in his balls. For sub $1,000 to get you into the thermal game, not a bad optic.
No.
Is it world class? Is it the best you're going to find? No. But for the cost of some shit that is out there, like paying $6,000 for some hardcore shit, or you could get into the game for less than $1,000, this will definitely get you in there. You know,
I also, living where we live, the sun goes down at like 6:30 right now.
Yeah.
From now, especially the next couple of weeks where we get into daylight savings time.
Yeah. We live in that area where, Paul, you get home from work and you take a nap. Sometimes you wake up and you don't know if you're late for work or if it's just the evening. You ever done that where you woke up and it's 6:45 and you're like, did I sleep all the way into the morning?
Is this AM or PM?
Yeah,
is
exactly. This AM or PM? You don't know how many times I've jumped up and started getting dressed just to walk out and see the old lady making dinner. Like, wait a minute, what's going on here?
When I was working third shift, I worked in an office that had no windows.
Oh, fuck.
So, man. So during the time in the winter, it was literally like, go in when it's dark.
Yeah.
Come out when it's dark.
Yeah.
It felt like, listen, this is skin complexion by paste.
There you go.
Like the when they're tuning the mayonnaise machines, they're just like, what color should we go for? It's this one.
Paul.
That one was bad. Like when I was getting that, it was real bad.
I worked in a factory making hammers. Good old S-Wing Manufacturing.
Ooh.
I'm sure everybody knows about an S-Wing hammer. Well, they're made in my hometown. But no windows, and I chose third shift just because you got a little bump in pay to come in third shift, and plus you ain't got to deal with management. Management's not their third shift. They don't want to work those hours, so that's why I chose to. But like, I would go in there, it'd be pitch black dark, and it just sucked because like, you'd open the door to leave at like 5:30, 6 in the morning, and the sun would be killing you. It was like, you know, I'm like, and then you got to drive home in it for 20 minutes and then try to go to bed. Forget about it.
You kind of turn into a little bit of a vampire. But
yeah.
Third shift is
the money shift, though. If anybody's curious and they're looking for a job and they're like, I don't want to work third shift. Third shift's where you make your money. Don't be a pussy.
It really is. Also, if you just don't want to be bothered.
Yeah.
There was a mill that I kind of like no information about. Forget about how I know this information.
All right.
But it was like during the day, let's say they had 30 managers that were on. At night, there was two. And they got more done at night.
That's what I'm saying, dude.
I mean, it's just like if you don't want to be bothered, like, and you can work your way through it. Swings is pretty hard. If you're doing Southern Swings where it's like nights for three, off for two, days for two.
I hated that shit. Yeah, I did that.
That's really, really tough.
That's rough. Like, you're going to work nights Monday, Tuesday. You're off Wednesday. You come back Thursday for days. Yep. But Friday, Saturday, you're nights. And I'm like, oh, my goodness.
One of the mills by up by me, they actually – they'll do that. But you're guaranteed off a full 7 days.
Oh.
Like a full week, 1 week per month. So
oh,
you get like a full 7 days. And they schedule it out pretty far.
Yeah.
So, like, you can actually, like, take advantage of it.
Yeah, that ain't bad.
And then I think some guys that can actually be like, hey, every third week, you're just like off for the entire week.
Hell yeah.
So
see, I mean, worked.
It can work.
What was it? I think it was when we started doing this podcast. I was on like second and third shift sometimes. Like it was definitely 2 p.m. to 10 for sure. Guaranteed. That was my shift. But sometimes at least 2 to 3 nights out of the week, I'd be there till 6 in the morning working a full 16. Like they'd be like, hey, you got to stay. And I'd be like, whatever, you know, it is what it is. But I liked that shift because you would like, I would wake up about 9 a.m. Even if I worked till 6, I'd come home, sleep for a few hours, wake up 9, 10. And then like I could go to the range and nobody's there because they're normal people and they're all at their jobs. And so I could just do what I want. And then I go back to, you know, go to the range for an hour or two and then go to work at 2. It was great. Granted, did I get sleep? Not really. But you give me 3-4 hours, I'll function for another 48. You know, I'm good to go.
That's tough for me to do. When I was working at UPS, it was like normally for like non-peak season, which kind of doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
It was like 3 a.m. to like 9. And that was Monday through Friday. We weren't delivering out of my facility on the weekends yet. And then when you got to peak, it started to be like 1 a.m., 12:30 to like 9 or 10.
Yeah.
So that was like pretty much
UPS November has always had weird hours.
January.
For anybody I've ever known to work UPS, it's never been like normal hours whatsoever.
No, and they kind of float because they like you can track how many packages are going to be coming the next day.
Yeah.
So you can kind of be like, hey, we're kicking it up 20 minutes because they kind of like have all of the like math and science behind like, okay, you should be loading X amount of packages per minute. And like, here's how many that are going to be coming to your facility.
Dude.
But I think my favorite shift, like a 7 to 3, somewhere around in there. Like, I kind of like that because it was 7 to 3 and then it was like 3 to 11 and then 11 to 7 are like the most common. Yeah. And I really don't like second shift. Like give me the morning or give me the night.
Now, don't get me wrong. I loved working second shift. I didn't mind going in from 2 to 10 because like you wake up somewhat early in the morning, you got time to run around, do your shit. You get to watch, you know, fucking Price is Right. You know, you get to hang out, you go to work, management's not there. You do your thing. You go home, reasonable time. You still get home around 10, go to bed, whatever. But like now, well, right now, Jamie has a crazy schedule.
Oh,
like you don't want to know. You don't want to know the pain that goes. I was actually going to make a Instagram clip of what my day is like because some people, it's hard being me right now.
I believe it.
I'm gonna run you through this, Paul. You're sleeping. You just passed out watching a 5-hour Star Wars Jedi lore video on YouTube.
Not okay? Cops.
No, I can't sleep during Cops. I always wake up during the damn theme song. I do. Okay,
so we've got the Star Wars lore video going.
I'll watch Star Wars lore videos or World War II history videos, and I pass right out.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
so I watch that 3:30 in the morning. My alarm goes off, and it starts with Sam Sulek talking about, you know, is this going to be one day or day one? You know, he's like, this is the time to go. And then I'm like, oh, snooze. And then it goes to C.T. Fletcher screaming at me, calling me, you better get your ass up and get in the gym, Jesus. Motherfucker. And I'm like, all right, it's time to get up. So 3:35, I'm up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I go to the bathroom. I do what I got to do. I get dressed, slam a protein pre-workout. I'm at the gym by 4.
Damn.
So from 4 to 5, I'm at the gym.
And then what time is bedtime?
About 8. About 8, I'll chew a couple multivitamins and a melatonin.
Okay. Because some people are like, I get up at 3, and it's like, okay, well, you're going to bed at 6, so.
Yeah, no, I get about 8, 9.
Okay, that's respectable. Yeah.
And so, gym, 4 to 5 in the morning, back home, cold shower.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing cold showers for like a month now.
Damn.
Like, just cold water, just one handle, turn it.
Okay.
It's awesome. It took about a good week to work it up, the courage and the math and the science of how to get in the cold shower without being a sissy. But
you just got to get in there.
You just jump in there, dude. You just
get in there and do work.
I do. This is going to look weird for anybody who's watching. And if you're not watching, you're missing out. But what I do is I turn the shower on, right? So cold water's coming down. And I like dive in like a ballerina kind of person. I get in like this. I go head first. And then I come up like this.
Do you come in from under?
Nope.
On the wall side of it, or do you come in on the fall side of it?
I'm against the wall, water's at my feet, and then I go like I like dive into it and like and I come up and I just gotcha. And I just let it just rain down on me.
Okay.
So that wakes you the hell up. And then I go to work at 6. I'm off work at 2:30. And then I come home, and then usually it's like, all right, what am I making for dinner? Or what is just the old lady making for dinner? and then I'll either edit video, I'll mess with a gun, I'll do some different stuff, and then usually I'll run some errands, mess around with shit at the house. Like today was Halloween decoration day. Ooh. And now we're podcasting. And
did you get one of those big skeletons from the Home Depot?
No, everybody has those. You want to know what I did get? I got three ghouls. Weren't we talking? Ooh. Was I discussing this with you last time? No. I got these three ghouls that talk. One of them's got a bat. He swings around. But
okay. Are they like motion activated?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. They're like, I want brains. And the other one's like, oh, last time I had them, they were terrible. Well, that's the good part. You know, it's stupid. It's stupid. But that's like, I get up early, I go to the gym, and then about 7 p.m. at night, I've been jumping on the 10 speed and riding around for about 5 miles.
Though, isn't it like just going for a bike ride?
Yeah.
It's kind of nice.
It is.
It's because
I need to get cardio in, and I hate the stationary bike at the gym because it's just boring as shit. And then like I was walking after dinner like every night, and that just gets boring. I'll take my dog out for a walk, and she's kind of like, she does her own thing. She don't really listen to me, but she's still a puppy, whatever. But like the bike ride, you're cruising the neighborhood, you're seeing shit, you're dodging cars, you know, and it's and I don't stop. I just keep my little fat legs just going. And it's like just pedal, 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 pedal. And it takes me about, I think like 30 minutes, maybe do five miles somewhere in there.
Weather's been fantastic up here.
Oh yeah.
Too. Like we're into October.
Yeah, it's hot as shit out today.
It's gonna be like 89 tomorrow.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Yeah. Yeah, but then we're into the 60s next week, which I'm fine.
But anyways, this you're talking about UPS. We're way off topic here. You're talking about UPS, and that made me think of Amazon lately. 2 years ago, they built this gigantic I live by an airport, so there's already a huge Amazon building next to the huge UPS building in my city. But Amazon also built like another huge building on the outskirts of the highway, which hasn't been used for like 2 years. It just sits there empty. Huge Amazon building. Right. But like in the last 2 months, they've been like starting up operations there. But now, dude, like Amazon, I can order something like when I wake up in the morning, like on my way to the gym, I can order something. It'll be at my house like that afternoon.
You can start getting the same day stuff?
Same day. And I ordered the egg cooker that Big John put me up on game with. Mm-hmm. And ladies and gentlemen, if you don't have an egg cooker, all right, yeah, all you got to do is boil water. Quit being lazy. Whatever. $20, you get an egg cooker. It makes a perfect egg. It peels fantastically every time, and it is a game changer for meal prep right now.
Which is the one that you got?
Whatever Amazon suggested.
Is it the circle one or is it the square one?
Circle.
Okay.
Seven eggs.
For like $20?
Yep.
Yep. I'm looking at it right now.
It's awesome. It plays a little music when your eggs are done. And like I love Big John because it's funny every time I eat those, because every time I peel an egg, he's like, dog. I'm telling you, it makes the perfect egg. And like Big John loves to use the word dog. And I know this because I was watching footage from Thunder on the Tundra where we're wearing the night vision. And I'm looking at him like, John, you are such a handsome son of a bitch with that night vision. He's like, dog, like right now I'm looking at you and you're just so handsome yourself. And then he's talking to Sean. He's like, dog, I'm telling you, this gun was only like $300, dog. And I'm like, if there's anybody who uses the word dog, it's Big John.
Lacey's like,
who's Big John? I was like, have you ever seen a really big dude? And you hear him say the word dog, that's Big John.
That's him. That's his dog.
Oh, 100%. Okay.
So one thing that I am...
You're getting an egg cooker, aren't you?
So
I'm
kind of allergic to eggs.
Oh, well, then don't do that.
So I'm probably not going to.
Yeah, no.
But they do have a double-decker one of these, which I'm very impressed by.
Yeah.
But I do kind of believe in a little bit of like buy the tool... Like the kitchen tool for the job. Yeah. If you're going to hammer something, don't use the back.
Don't use a wrench. Use a hammer. Yeah.
Use an actual hammer. Yeah. So like if somebody is out there and they're like, man, I really want to like, you know, do all the hard boiled, like eat a lot of hard boiled eggs.
Oh, dude.
Just get the hard boiled egg cooker. It's kind of like.
It's amazing. It takes like 7 minutes. No, I lied. Like 12. 12 minutes to do like 7 eggs.
Like if you get a rice cooker.
Oh, I've got one of them too.
Like
I used to murder rice before I had a rice cooker, and the rice like cooker is so damn easy.
Buy the tool, the right tool for the job. Now, I don't necessarily think that you need your entire kitchen countertop being covered with
gizmos.
Like specific things.
Yeah.
Like I've got, and this is something that I think my grandma got me for Christmas when I was in college, but it's literally like a little thing where it toasts the English muffin, it cooks the bacon, it cooks the egg, and then you like slide out all the different parts of it, and then like a little
egg muffin comes out right away. Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. Those things are awesome.
So I've got one of those. I break it out every once in a while.
Hell yeah.
But that's almost like a little bit too specialized. Like I can go and I can make an egg on the side.
Yeah, but like you better have a silicone ring to make it round.
So that is the thing. It's just kind of like it is a little fun. Yeah. I also was using that illegally in college in my dorm room a lot.
I love those things. I know exactly what you're talking about. Me and my guy Tony would make hella breakfast sandwiches with that thing.
Yeah, and they come out really nice and it's really fun and and it's easy to clean up and it's one machine.
Yeah, you can buy the pre-cut ham slices that are a perfect circle that fit right in that bad boy.
Yeah. Or like a waffle maker.
Oh, obviously. Dude, I had a stint in my life. I had 3 waffle makers in my house. Not even bullshitting. I had a Belgium, the one that flips. Mm-hmm. I had a square. And I also had another Belgium that made 4 little waffles. And ooh, I was, dude, it was bad. It was at the peak of my obesity. I'm not even lying, dude. I was pushing 250 easy. And then, dude, I just loved waffles. I was like making waffles when I was bored. I would just, anybody who knows me that's been to a competition, like I have to get a hotel that has a waffle maker. Like I will call them. Like, you guys got a waffle maker? Oh, yes, we do. I'll be like, do you have golden dip batter? Like, I don't fuck around, dude. I'm like a waffle snob, dude. Like, don't be giving me no bullshit.
There's like, you can also do a lot of different things with a waffle maker.
Kind of like cornbread.
Cornbread's really good. If you take frozen hash browns
and
make like a hash brown waffle out of them, that's really, really good in there. I've cooked eggs in a waffle maker before. Yep. I mean, there's a waffle maker is pretty versatile in terms of like what you can come up with.
I even have a George Foreman and I forget I have it sometimes because I haven't used it in forever.
I've got an old school, not a George Foreman, but I've got another panini press that's out there that I do really, really like.
You like paninis?
Do like paninis.
I like a hot sandwich. I like a hot sandwich.
Paninis are
amazing.
So first hot take of the podcast here. A grilled cheese can have bread and cheese.
Yes.
If you add anything else to it, it is now a melt.
Okay. I see where you're going with that.
A grilled cheese.
Dude.
Bread and cheese.
There's a food truck out here that specializes in grilled cheeses and they get wild with it. Dude, they make all types of crazy shit. Back in my high obesity days.
If they're doing a lot of cheese on there, that's fine. But if they're like, we're going to add bacon to a grilled cheese. Nope. Now that's a bacon melt.
Is it really though?
Yes. Yep. All right. Grilled cheese. All right. Also, you should be cooking your cheese separate.
What?
You should actually be grilling the cheese.
All right. This is weird. You're bringing in full on Wisconsin shit now.
No. This is like, do you know who Alton Brown is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Food science. If you're going to make the best grilled cheese that you can, you should be, because you want those crispy edges on the cheese.
I suppose.
Like the lacy edges that are all around
like,
it.
See, okay.
You want you're that Wisconsin. For all of the cheese.
You're a Wisconsin guy. You probably use like quality cheese. I'm a Kraft Singles man.
No, you should be also doing this with Kraft Singles too.
Oh, okay.
You should be cooking your cheese separate, and then you should have the bread out on the griddle.
You can cook cheese?
Yeah, you cook the cheese separate. So you have that and like a non everybody go look up Alton Brown's how to cook a grilled cheese because it'll change your life.
This used to be a shooting podcast. Now we're
No. We're far past that. We're far past that now. Also, you should put a little bit of cheese on your bread so then the outside gets super crispy as well.
What do you use? Do you use butter?
I use mayo.
Yeah. See, that's what I was wondering. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And get like, don't like a grilled cheese does not need brioche.
Right.
Like brioche bread is too sweet for a grilled cheese.
Yeah.
Like a nice sourdough, something that's going to crust up really, really well.
I love a sourdough, man.
Dude. A sourdough is, if there's sourdough in my house, it will not survive the day.
I think we've talked about that. You know what? Back in my high obesity days, Hardee's or Carl's Jr., whatever you want to call it, they used to have the
sourdough.
They had the double grilled cheese thick burger on sourdough. And boy, Fat Jamie used to fall in love with those things.
That's like a sweaty fat too.
Oh,
that's not like,
dude, it was.
That's not like a, you're kind of like, you're wearing
it. No, it was,
that's
I'm like, not doing anything else after this kind of burger.
You're the hot dog on God's roller grill at this point in
time.
It was
bad.
Just getting a nice little sheen going for that.
Like I can't eat that shit now. It's bad.
Well, should we get back? Should we get?
Let's talk about. Let's talk about what we did last weekend.
So it was Thunder on the Tundra 2025.
We survived the storm of Thunder on the Tundra 2025. We did.
It was
and it blew in hard.
You were one of the competitors. I was one of the match staff for it.
Fantastic job.
So thank you. So let me back up a little bit to kind of like how it happened and kind of like what our goals were for the match. And then I saw you raised your hand there.
I was trying to thumbs up Paul for his
for the reactions there.
Yeah.
But let me back up a little bit. I'll talk about some of the goals that we had for the match, some of the props that we designed, and then kind of go to your opinion on that. How does that
all right. work? You hit me. Are we going stage by stage here?
Or
are
you no, we won't go out? Stage by stage because I'll just kind of talk at a high level, kind of like what we were trying to do. So
all right, hit it.
Some of the biggest changes that we did this year is we went to an AM-PM split. So AM-PM meaning you have squads that shoot in the morning, so 8 a.m. till about noon, and then squads that shoot in the afternoon, 1 till about 6. And then the next day, it was like everybody only had three stages left. So they shot from like 8 to like 11 and then like 11 till 3. And that was one of the biggest changes that we did over last year. Stated goal for that, for me at least, was wanted to give people more time with the vendors. Mm-hmm. So we had Select Fire come out, and they were doing machine gun rentals. We had the Stenzel guys come out, which I've got funny story with them. But they had their new rifles that were out there, one of them being Select Fire, the other one being Semi. Beautiful rifles.
Yeah.
Like, got a video out on it.
They look very space agey, and they look like they 100% look like something out of a video game.
Yeah,
you'll
probably start seeing them in video games here soon as they kind of get the word out. But like, the Joe Stenzel, the namesake, kind of walked me through all the design decisions that went into that, and it was something old that is now new. Is probably the best way that I could describe it. But if you want more information on them, I would say like go look at their website, or Clay does have a video out there. But like I would definitely seek them out. But like AM-PM goal, give you more time to shoot with the kind of shoot the shit with the vendors, talk with them, do what you need to do, kind of get ready. And a lot more majors just kind of have that split that's out there.
And it works.
So for a lot of them it does. I think I set up the practice score a little bit wrong this year. We could have had more squads in the afternoon. So we could have more people that were being let in. But with it being the first time that we were doing this, kind of a learning experience when it comes to that.
Yeah.
Some of the groundwork that we did, it was myself, Scott, Ben, who came up with a lot of the stages and then took input from the rest of the staff. But we got together at a different range and said, hey, we've got some ideas. Let's get them down on paper, and then we're just going to try them out just to see how they flow. It's not going to be a one-for-one, but maybe we'll do half of the stage and kind of see how this looks, or try to come up with some different ideas, because when you could actually see it in front of you, you might feel a little bit differently about it.
Yeah.
So we were able to do that, found out some things where it was like, hey, we should have them shoot from only 3 positions instead of 4. Because 4 is impossible. Or like, hey, this kind of works on paper, but when you actually get this out as a stage design, it kind of takes forever.
Yeah.
And we don't want people to just be sitting around forever. Another one of our goals was to have smaller squads. So in the past, we had 20. This year, we had 12. So trying to get people through faster so you kind of keep the good juices flowing.
Right.
But then also still having enough people where you can still kind of go forward and pace. So trying to take a holistic idea of stage design with kind of like engagement for folks, as well as how the whole match flowed together, was a lot of what we were trying to achieve. We did have a theme this year. We didn't hit as hard on the theme as we have in years past, but I think that was fine. Some people thought it was Back to the Future. It was mostly just like, shooting through time is probably the best way to do it. But we had like some World War One, World War Two. We had a colonial stage. We had a pirate stage. We had a kind of like a saloon shootout stage. Kind of like some different things that were out there. We had one where you had to slay a dragon, which was kind of like a quick burner stage where then you had to like dive into a Cooper tunnel. So we had some fun stuff that was going on there too. But like overall, one of the other goals that we had was how do we get more people recognized for shooting achievement?
Yeah.
So we did have a challenge stage that was off to the side where top 20 shooters in this challenge stage received a almost solid brass challenge coin with kind of a balaclava figurehead, and then the outside of it being like the doubloon from Pirates of the Caribbean. So trying to fit in kind of with some theme going on there. And then our shirt design was by Scott as well, which had kind of like a pirate flag theme to it along with our patches. So kind of with all of that condensed down into, okay, how do we put this on? I arrived the Wednesday. So staff shoot was on Friday. Saturday, Sunday was when everybody else shot. I arrived down there with the rest of staff. On Wednesday, we moved around all the heavy stuff. Thursday, we set up all of the stages. Friday, we stapled all of the paper and had the staff shoot. And then Saturday and Sunday was when everybody else ran. And it, truthfully, because we did all of that pre-work with like trying out the stages and here's what works and here's what doesn't have, here are the diagrams for where we need things to be set up. All in all, we probably had like 18 hours of setup over the course of like 3 days. So I think like doing that groundwork, you know, getting a lot, as much input as we could, trying things out beforehand, kind of doing inventory of what the range had and does not have beforehand, meant that we didn't have to set up for like 24 hours beforehand.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So if there's other folks that are out there that are, hey, how do I kind of like get going into a match, or how do I set some stuff up? Pre-work, 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 pre-work. You know, make sure that you go to the range beforehand, not like the day beforehand, but like 2 weeks before. How do these things look? You know, if you're going there all the time, that's great. But like, you know, making sure that you have an inventory of things, I think really led us to be successful in our setup. Now, whether we executed in terms of like shooter appreciation, I feel like we did. I'm always open to feedback. So if somebody, you know, disagrees with me, please reach out. I'm Recaroni and Cheese on Instagram. That's probably the best way to get a hold of me. But if you were at Thunder on the Tundra 2025, number one, thank you very much for coming. If you were a vendor, thank you very much for attending. A sponsor, obviously, we greatly appreciate your sponsorship, and we want to make sure that we're continuing to earn your sponsorship. So if you had any problems with us, please reach out to me. Or if there's anything that you think that we could have done better or different, again, please reach out. And that goes for all attendees at this point in time. But that's just kind of like the pre-work that I really wanted to hit on, because it is very similar to like the pre-work that people should be doing for like, if you're just going to come and shoot the event, making sure that your rifle's zeroed, making sure that you have the right mags, yeah. Like, you know, doing a self inventory and evaluation before you get to a match, no matter what that match is, I think is very important. And if you're the one putting on the match, making sure that you're doing essentially a self match inventory is also very important.
Hell yeah. Very well said, Paul.
Thank you. I mean, this is the culmination work of seven people, where we started on this in like February of last year, in order to get this put on, because it's shirts, it's banners, it's waivers, it's talking to the range, it is, you know, making sure that we've got the right steel. You know, it's not an insignificant amount of work. The actual physical aspect of it, I just want to call out kind of like the total amount of time that we were there, just as like a hey, when you do all of the pre-work, when you actually arrive, things start to get pretty easy.
Hell yeah. Okay, from my aspect, Paul, from what I've seen, this is my fifth Thunder, and Thunder holds a special place in my heart because Thunder on the Tundra was 5 years ago. It was the very first competition I ever went to. When I said, this is close to home, I can try this out. I've gone to the range. I can shoot competition, you know? I was right and I was wrong at the same time, right? You know what I'm saying? Because, yeah, I can do it. Was I as good as I thought I would be? Hell no. You know? But so I love Thunder. I'll always be there. I don't think there'll ever be a year I don't go to Thunder because, like I said, it's too close and it's special to me. But mm-hmm. out of all the Thunders I've went to, I felt this one ran very smooth. I felt the stages were damn good. And there was a nice flow to it. Everything worked out. I liked the splits of the AM, PM. Because it even seemed like past years when there was no split, there was a lot of, I mean, I'm not faulting anybody for this, but there was a lot of times where, like, you would get, you know, fucking jammed up waiting for somebody, and that would make you be there all day. Whereas this year, I didn't have to shoot till, like, what, 1 o'clock on Saturday and then 11 o'clock Sunday?
Yeah. Yeah. So the first rounds for the PM squads were probably going on about those times.
Yeah. And it worked out fantastically. Like, I shot the stages I was supposed to shoot. There was no waiting. We were fucking moving along. And it was great. Great stage designs. Great stage designs.
Thank you.
And no 30-second bonuses for throwing bottles through holes in cardboard, which I greatly appreciated.
So one of the things that I think we could have hit on a little bit better from last year was, like, more talking about what we wanted to achieve with those 30-second bonuses and how it tied into the theme. And, like, how that all kind of, like, cohesively worked together.
Right.
And you know what? Sometimes you got to try some stuff.
Yeah.
So
I get it. I'm not mad at anybody.
Yeah. So last year it was a video game theme, and, like, you know, you hit, like, a checkpoint or something like that, you get a little bit more time. And, like, it is, there was some skill involved with some of it, but, like, it also wasn't supposed to, it was supposed to, like, factor into, like, everybody's time. And I think that we could have done a little bit better job kind of explaining that. So this year, instead, we went the route of some punishing, not bonuses, punishing, like, FTNs, no shoots, like the time that went into that. So the penalty times. Thank you.
I'm a big fan of HVTs.
Yeah. So one of the things that we also did this year is we started to work in some, like, high value targets where it's like you get one shot at a clay.
Yep.
And we had a couple of those that were spread around, but the penalty for missing that shot on a clay was 60 seconds.
Yeah, it was.
So it really had a, I think, like, a gas pedal effect on some folks where it's like, hey, like, fast, mags out. Oh shit. Let's breathe. Let's think about this for a little bit, because you can take your time on that. Like, taking 15 seconds so then you don't get a 60 second penalty.
Yeah.
Like, the penalties are so high that it really caused you to try to modulate gas versus brakes that were out there. We did have a stage that I want to say only, like, 6 or 7 people finished clean, which was a long range stage. I've stolen this from I kind of stole the idea from a couple of different matches over the years, but none of them
son of a bitch really of a stage. I'm just going to say that right now.
Yeah. So it was one of those where all of your mags are held at essentially the start box. And then you've got 3 different shooting positions, 4 targets down at 200 yards, 150 yards and 100 yards. You have to double tap each of them. Two hits on each, no double taps. Right. And then when you run out, you have to dump your rifle and you have to run back to the start in order to grab your next mag. So the heavy guys, because they only required one hit on steel, did pretty good on this one. But everybody else, I mean, we had a couple of people throw up on this one.
It was exhausting.
It was rough. So one of the things that we were talking about before this was, like, that was probably the most physical stage out of all of them.
Yeah.
All of them, you know, some of them did have some physical components, but it was more like getting in and out of position or, like, kind of like leaning. And when I say physical, it's not like physically demanding like this one was, but it was more so like, okay, you might have to switch shoulders, you know, do some different things like that. But one of the things that we talked about is, okay, if you have this extreme physical stage, do you want to start with this one? Do you want to end with this one? Or do you want it to be someplace in the middle?
I was glad for me it was at the very end. That was my very last stage.
Mm-hmm.
Because after everybody, the whispers were going around about it. Man, you seen stage one? You seen stage one? Dude, stage one, I just got off stage one. You know, and everybody's like, well, what the fuck is stage one? But then, like, you know, middle of the first day, everybody knew what it was. You know, everybody was like, oh, yeah, stage one's coming. But, like, I feel for me, that stage is either going to, for me at least, I don't know how everybody else's mindset is in these things, but I know for me, that stage was either going to, it was going to set the tone or it was going to drag me down like for how the rest of that competition was going to go. So that's why I was glad it was my last stage, because I just knew, all right, it's here. You know, the thing everybody's been whispering about, everything you got left, you got to push into this thing. It wasn't, instead of, okay, here we are, Thunder on the Tundra. Yeah, first stage. And then like, then I would have just been walking around. That thing just kicked my ass. Good God.
Smoked.
You know, yeah. So I'm glad it ended up for me last, as it, like I said, I just knew for like a day and a half, all right, don't get burnt out, because you still have, you know, this stage at the end where you got to give everything plus 2% that you have left. And I did, and it sucked.
Yeah, and I think I'm gonna agree with you in that I would want it on, man, it's tough, because I think I'd want it on day one.
Yeah.
But towards the end of day one.
Yeah.
Only because the people that had the roughest time with it on Sunday, day two, were campers.
Yeah.
And then people that had a little bit too much fun the night before.
Praise the king.
Hey, huzzah. Let's get some huzzahs in chat here, folks. But like I can control how I feel going into, we'll call it the first day.
Yeah.
Going into the second day though, I mean, sometimes it can kind of be a crapshoot where it's just like, hey, we went out, at Masters, didn't mean to stay out until midnight.
Yeah.
Now we shot in the PM, so it really wasn't that big of a deal. Right. And you can control this. I'm not trying to insinuate that I'm like an alcoholic or something like that. But
you do live in Wisconsin, Paul.
Yeah. Yeah. But it is one of those where like, hey, you're torqued up, you're staying at an Airbnb with a bunch of guys, like from that first day, maybe you don't get the best night's sleep going into Sunday or day two. Like, then like I would kind of want to do that on day one, but towards the end of day one. But that one was pretty tough. The other one that I think people kind of thought was really, really hard was actually the boat stage. And that was another one where I built all the props for that as well, where we actually sat your ass in a like 8-foot John boat.
Oh, John boat.
Yeah. Flat bottom John boat, and put you on a swing. And then we had like a mast in front of you. And then you would just shoot your way kind of around this stage from a seated position. Yeah. So again, not physically demanding, but you were leaning to your left and right. And
the boat did move.
It moved a lot. It
swayed. You know what? Yeah. Before we skip this boat stage, do you know the fan show has the cobalt blue fan that you can plug into the water?
Yeah.
That would have been ideal on that stage. Me and Show talked about that. I was like, dude, if we had your fan just blowing mist in people's faces as you're on the boat,
really cool.
That would have been badass.
So originally, because when you kind of start out with anything, you start off with the dream.
Yeah.
And then it's like, let's trim it back to the achievable.
Yeah.
And originally what I want to do is literally put like a telephone pole in the ground, like a mast, and have like a big sail up on top, like in front of you. And then you would have to like lean and like possibly stand up and kind of go around. And then I was going to put like rope, like the sailor's rope, like on the props, and then literally have one of those, like a big fan in front of you with a hose spraying water all over you.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, in competitions, you have to build stuff where it's repeatable. So everybody gets the same experience.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that would have been repeatable in order for that to happen. But I think having the spray coming, I think that would have been really, really cool.
Hell yeah.
So I had thought about that. We had also thought about trying to rig it where like you would literally have the boat pulled all the way back. And then there would be like some kind of water barrel in front of you, and then we would pull something while you were in it, and then you would come forward and slam into this water barrel. So then essentially like the water would then spray on you for that, like you're going through the waves. That's another one that wasn't repeatable. We thought we were going to have somebody standing behind you with a cord pulling on it where it was like you were going through the waves. So again, big dreams.
Oh yeah.
But okay, what is achievable so that like 200 people can go through this in a weekend?
The dream and the reality of things.
Yeah. Yeah. But like I've seen some other matches where they literally have like pyrotechnics going off like around you.
Nice.
And like they've got smoke grenades that are going off.
Yeah.
And like those are very, very cool. We do have range restrictions that are out there, but like, hey, if you're in a position and then all of a sudden a firework is going off right next to you, you know, trying to get into kind of like a simulation mindset, like I think that that would be really, really fun. We only have so many volunteers. We only have so many hours in the day, but right. I definitely agree with you that that could have been really fun on the boat stage.
Hell yeah. Next year, if you have a boat stage, you let me know. I got one of those fans. I went and bought one of those fans. I'll help you out.
One of the other props that we did, I actually took a barrel, cut the top off of it, cut a square in the bottom of it, and then screwed it onto a wall prop that then had a hole in the middle of it. So then everybody had to shoot through this barrel.
Yeah.
So people with big muzzle brakes, shout out on Unrivaled, you either had to climb all the way into the barrel to try to get your muzzle brake out on the other side, or you just kind of had to eat it.
You want to talk about climbing in the barrel, okay? There's people like Jamie here who's like armpits forward into the barrel, right? I'm in the barrel as, you know, in the barrel can be for me. Then you have people like my guy, Tommy, who's literally waist to fucking eyebrows in this barrel. Like
he really shoved himself in there.
Dude, I don't know if I'm pretty sure I got video and or a picture of it, but I was like, what the hell is he doing? And he's like, I'm going in the barrel. I was like, yeah, everybody's going in the barrel. He's like, no, I'm going in the barrel. And he did. He like went all out. And I was like, what the fuck is this guy doing? But props to Tommy, you know, whatever. That's my guy. But yeah, he was legit in that barrel.
Yeah. And that was something that I really wanted to force people to have the thought.
Yeah.
Hey, do I just eat this? There was one guy that was shooting a Galil 308 on the staff match, and he had pretty long hair. And he had the stock muzzle brake on it, actually. And his hair was getting like blown back.
Oh, I'm sure.
And that barrel was full of brass by the end of the day, too. So yeah. that was pretty fun to see there. We did have a pretty cool hoser stage where we had like six targets that were kind of arranged like a dragon that kind of came down, and it was literally just like ride it up. You've got a really cool video on that if people want to see kind of how that looks.
Oh, yeah.
But we had everything from like parring out with shots at 200 yards to like, hey, this one takes like 15 seconds. Yeah. So I think we hit a pretty decent diversity of stages on this one.
Where did that swinger, was that swinging prop in the dragon stage? Was that from the range? Was that there?
So we just found that. So we had when you started off, you had to pull on essentially a stick that then sent some no shoot swinging, and you kind of had to shoot around the no shoots, in order to get the targets that were behind that.
Yeah, that was interesting. And, I really liked that stage. I really liked that stage.
It was a fast stage. It was really, really fast.
24 seconds fast. What are you talking about, dude?
Ooh, yeah, that's quick.
Yeah, I didn't mess around. And like Paul said, you can see that. You know what? Here, we'll just do this. I think I have it right here. Can you see this?
Yeah, that's up.
Okay. Oh, my God.
I can't even hear it.
I'm ready. Bye.
All right, so you pull the actuator here. It's going and swinging. You had to load. We had some unloaded starts for this. Got to wait for it to come through. A couple more. Then you move to another position on the other side of the bay. And here
stay in the box. Doubles.
And you just rode it all the way up there. Got to make sure that you got a reload. And then you get in here. And then you did have to shoot around a little bit of a barrel.
Yeah!
That was really quick.
That's my guy Tommy. Again, hold on. Stupid windows. Okay, we're back. But yeah, I loved that stage. That was my angry stage of the day. Yep. Not because I had shoes on that were too small, but because the stage before that, I got a penalty for being an idiot, and it cost me a podium spot. But it's whatever. Okay. But yeah, I ran that stage angry. That's why I did it so fast. And plus, I was watching other people run it. And what I noticed was people would pull the cord, you know, because you start hands above the head.
Mm-hmm.
They would drop both hands, pull the cord, grab their rifle, then grab the magazine, then insert. I'm like, why is everybody doing it like that? And I watched like so many people, like one, two, three, one, two, three. And I was like, drop both your hands, grab your magazine when you pull that cord, and then grab your rifle. That's like one less step. That probably saves you like a whole 2 seconds right there. And then, like I said, I just ran it angry. I was mad. And it worked out for me.
Yeah, and that was, I mean, I'm looking at your times here. You did have the foot fault procedural that was out there. And there was, you know, we can kind of talk about how things were explained. But I mean, you were not alone in terms of like the foot fault penalties that were there.
Yeah.
And we did, well, I kind of decided and convinced other people where, and I think this is pretty common in terms of like three gun and other like match governing bodies where, let's say you have a foot fault, but it doesn't give you really any advantage. It's just like, well, you stepped outside the line. Okay, that's one. Maybe like that's kind of one. They're not going to stack. But if it gives you an advantage, they do stack. And it in looking at this, they did give you kind of
oh,
like,
I got the advantage. Yeah,
yeah. So you got 65 seconds in penalties for that one, which is real rough.
Oh yeah.
Another thing that we had that is, I'm seeing more and more of, which people are going to say like, no, that's been around for a while. This is just something that I'm saying, is that you have cascading penalties on steel. So the further out it is, the harsher the penalties are, and the closer in it is, the less the penalties are. So like, for example, miss on steel at like 199 plus is 45 seconds while like, you know, in from there is 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So, you know, that kind of got some people tripped up a little bit too, when it comes to the scoring. We learned a little bit from that. I definitely did not include the scoring the way that it was scored for like the first squad. And then for the second squad, I made sure that we started including it past there. So if I did not explain that to you, I'm really sorry, but tried to get more people into that, because if you want to go to a if you want to go to a war with a target, probably better to do it at like 200. But like if you're going to skip some, like don't skip all of them at 200. Skip half of them and then go forward from there.
Yeah, and you described, I have the coin right here we talked about earlier.
Yes, really, really proud of what Scott came up with for that one. We gave it to the top 20 folks. It was kind of wanted to do it like a Top Gear challenge where it was like you were just out there drag racing. I am pretty proud of that. I did get the fastest time on this one. So that was kind of my achievement for the weekend.
It's like my Power Rangers coin.
I've got mine on my desk over there someplace.
Yeah, I had to have the lady bring it out. I had to send her a text real quick. I was like, we're talking about the challenge coin. Grab it off the
board
and bring it in here.
They are super premium. Like, yeah. I'm really, dude, really happy with the way that those turned out. And also for everybody that did wind up shooting that, you know, I know that ammo is expensive, but, you know, I wanted to make sure that we recognized more people than just like the top shooters that were out there. For example, you got fourth. You had a great match. And I mean, you really came into this with, I think, a mental focus and like a demeanor that I haven't, not that you've been shooting bad recently, but that I really haven't seen you from a while. Like, even other people have commented on it. You were shooting loose.
Yeah.
Not like with a screw loose or like, you know, you were throwing shots or things like that, but you were back to having fun.
Yeah.
And I was happy where it was just like, hey, we've got our top 15 that are here where, you know, they placed, but not all of those top 15 were the top 15 in terms of placement for this one challenge stage.
Right.
You know, we had a lot of people that were out that came out and ran it, where it was like, hey, this was like your win for the day. And I wanted to make sure that we recognized them. And I think that we achieved that as well.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was awesome. But yeah, back to me, Paul, if you will.
The point of the pod.
No, honestly, this year I went in, I had a completely different mindset than I normally do. Like, normally I'm just like angry at myself, telling myself, you know, you got to do better than last year, which I always tell myself, and 8 out of 10 times this year I have. And this year it was just, I went with the mindset of like, clear your head. Don't let one bad stage or one bad shot get to you.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you're using these rifles. You know, these rifles, we're not just, you know, lollygagging and, well, I just got this new optic, so I'm using this one this time, you know, I'm sticking with these two right here. My 103 and my M23. I'm sticking with these because, for one, there's no modifications on these. There's no K&S pistons. I mean, this does have an adjustable gas. I've never adjusted it, but there's nothing that I feel can go wrong with these, because that's how they are. They're, for the most part, stock, you know. And it's like, I know this 103, I've said it many times, I've dumped many a thousand of round, no exaggeration, through this thing, and it just goes. It's buttery smooth, it's well broken in, it just works. And of course the M23 by Mark Krebs himself is a fantastic rifle, and it's just, it's awesome. I've got it just how I like it. Maybe right now might still do a tweak or two, but I went in with the don't let things bring you down. Mm-hmm. And then just like when you're on deck, get in your zone, dude. Like that very first stage, I kind of laughed at myself because the very first stage we shot, I'm like, all right, it's almost my turn. And then I had my Ray-Bans on. And once again, I hate to sound like broken record. I went back to Spotify, play me some CT Fletcher. And so I just got this, I got this angry weightlifter dude yelling at me in my head, you know, calling me a bitch motherfucker and get off your ass and do something, you know? And I'm like, yeah, dude, you gotta do something, you know, let's make it happen. Let's make it happen. Yeah. Tommy's comes up to me. I was like, I just held my hand in his face. I was like, not now. And then he just walks away. And then I shot the stage and I had to go up to him. I was like, hey man, I was just getting in my zone. You know, I love you. Nothing but, he's like, hey man, I understood what you were doing. You know, he's like, I ain't mad at you. It worked. Look at you. You were doing great out there. I was like, I had the mindset of just go, just get out there.
Yeah.
You know, don't put too much pressure on yourself. Just shoot. You know these guns, you've been messing with them for the last couple of weeks. You know what everything's sighted in it. You know, your height over bores on, you know, this shit for the most part. I was zoned in and I felt good. I felt really good.
Well, and I think kind of getting back to this, like, you did the pre-work.
Yeah.
So like if you do the work beforehand, you can, like, that's when you can start talking about, I think, expectations. But John and I talk about this all the time, and I'm going to butcher this quote, but it's like, don't be disappointed in the results because of the work that you didn't do.
Dog.
And like, hey, rifles are zeroed. I know which ones that I'm shooting. Yeah. I've got a lot of rounds through them. Like, I'm not flutzing with stuff in the hotel room the night before. And we were talking about this too, and I think we can kind of lead into this a little bit as well. Like, a match is not the time to say, oh, this is for practice.
Right.
Or even if it's a local.
Yeah, like, no.
A match is not the time to be like, I'm figuring stuff out. A match is the test.
Yeah.
Like, for the practice work that you've done before. So, like, when people are, I was ROing on the 200-yard bay for a lot of the day, and I asked a lot of people, how confident are you in your zero? And so many people came, and they were just like, I don't know. Yeah. And it's not like you, like, going out and confirming a 200 is important, but let's say that you don't have access to that.
Yeah.
Like, making sure that you have a good 50 is now becomes even more important, or making sure that you have a good 36 or 25, like the one that you're going to go with is now very important. And if you just get out there and you stand and you shotgun a target and you just go like, well, I can hit this target, that's not doing the work in order to achieve the results that you want.
Right.
That is mag dumping into trash.
Yeah.
And I used to think that the folks at Thunder, the people that come every single year, I used to think that they were kind of like getting better and better at that. This year, with, I would say, some of the more challenging shooting aspects of it, height over bore, you only get one shot. We've got a lot of tight no shoots, 200 yards while you're winded. I think exposed a lot of poor pre-work and practice for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Now, for you, you identified that. Okay, what am I going to do to correct this?
Yep.
And you did successfully. Like, now there's kind of a blueprint for like what it does come forward. Yep. You got fourth in your division. I mean, literally, you were like, you're less than 10 points away from third place.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
or one foot fault, whatever, however you want to put it. It's
fantastic.
Whatever. Yeah.
And I mean, there were some people there that could shoot.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that everybody was pretty poor, did poorly or anything like that. But I think now is the time for reflection for a lot of people in terms of like, okay, what did I do? What was I expecting? And if it's just like, well, I'm just there to have fun. Okay, that's fine. but then don't complain about anything.
Yeah.
Or if you're just like, man, I really thought that I was going to do better than this. Okay, what was your lead up into this?
Yeah. What'd you do before this?
Yeah. Yeah. And well, I'm not like, even talking like the morning of, but like, do you have a rifle that's zero?
Well, that's like last year. Like I said, last year was terrible for me. I shot like my first stage shitty. Mm-hmm. I shot my second stage shitty. And then it was just, there was no stopping me after that. I was just pissed off. I was angry. And then a no shoot would just cause me to be in a fucking tantrum. You know, just like, what in the hell am I doing? Just pissed. Couldn't even get out of my own head. Sat in the hotel room all night, just stewing. Woke up pissed. You know, and it's like, that's not the way to do it, Jamie. Like, I literally had to like sit down, like listen to some serious, like not self-help podcasts, but listen to some serious, like other shooting podcasts, people talking about like the mindset to get into. When we've talked to a lot of guests about this, like we talked to Kyle and Zach at Unrivaled. We talked to Josh. I mean, even like the two-parter with Moisha was a big help for me. There's a certain mindset that I had to try to get myself into. And I feel like I did that. And I feel like it tremendously helped getting into a different mindset instead of just being pissed off that, okay, yeah, you got two no shoots. Go to the next stage. There's nothing you can do instead of walking around kicking shit. I got two no shoots, son of a bitch, you know, just being pissed. But also, like you said, the pregame, not hanging out at the hotel or camp the night before, just like this is zeroed at 25. This is zeroed at 50. I took both of these to the range just the week before. I left on Friday. I was at the range Monday, Wednesday, Thursday. And it's like, all right, I zeroed them as best as I could. Instead of the, it's good enough zero, I'm hitting my, you know, 4-inch circle at, you know, X amount of yards, I'm good. It was, no, I can probably still click this over to, you know, two clicks and get a little bit better. I'll move this up one, you know, get it as tight as I can, shoot at 100. Okay, I'm a little bit high at 100. I'm a little bit low here. You know, just keep that in mind. And then just knowing the layout of, okay, I know there's certain bays where it's not going to be past 50 yards. It's not going to be past 25 yards. So this is my 25 yard rifle. This is my everything past 25 yard rifle. Cause I know where this is going to hit. I know where this is going to hit. And I put in some good pregame work and it paid off because this is honestly the best I've ever shot at a competition. And it feels good now. Yeah. I'll be honest with you. It took me a couple days of son of a bitching myself until I realized, what are you pissed about?
Yeah, you got to take pity dick out of your mouth every once in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
I did great. Okay. No trophies for Jamie. You suck. But like, this is the best I've ever shot. And I can look back at everything and look at my scores and be like, you did pretty damn good, dude. Like,
yeah. Quit bitching. Fourth out of 61.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
I'll take that.
Yeah. And at what is considered a major. But any other thoughts on Thunder?
Best year I've had there. Stages were great. The stages were, like you said, to everybody, I mean, mostly everybody that's there has been there since I've been there. Right. It's like everybody seems like a familiar face. I told you my story earlier about people talking to me. But if you said hi to me, I appreciate you. If I didn't remember your name, don't take it personal, but I know your face. I know I've seen you there before and I'm happy to see you.
There were quite a few folks that came up and said that they were a fan of the pod, which I also really, really appreciated. And
I greatly thank you for that wholeheartedly. Yeah. But it was, like you said, it was a reality check for most people compared to what it was last year. And don't get me wrong, I still enjoyed it, even though I shot like shit. Just the way the stages were laid out, it was a lot more of, like you said, do you know your height over bore? Do you know that there's only 4 inches of this target showing? Are you going to hit it? Or are you going to clip this barrel instead? You know, do you know, okay, you got to shoot to the left, you got to shoot to the right. Do you know your distance at 150? Do you know it at 50? Do you know it at 200? You know, are you going to be able to shoot a clay pigeon at 50 yards with one shot? You know, instead of, hey, keep shooting at it until you get it. You know, I think it was a good, not necessarily the word reality check, but that's the only thing I can think of right now in my GED educated brain. But it was like a good, like, sit back and go, oh, maybe I should have took a little bit more time with this before I came out here.
Yeah. You know? And even for me,
I wish I would have had like another day of just fucking around at the range.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't hurt.
Eventually you got to kind of put up or shut up.
Yeah.
And that is what matches are for.
Oh yeah.
You know, if when we go out, we can kind of design stuff or like challenges or, you know, practice based off of some of the other things that we, other matches that we've gone to, classes that we've gone to, you know, just other things that we've seen online and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you're never going to push yourself like you do on the clock.
No.
Or like in front of other guys, like dudes watching dudes on the clock.
Yeah.
And that's why matches are important, because it is that test of like, okay, where are you actually at when it comes to things?
Yeah, going to the range, like you said, going to the range and, oh, I can hit this, I can hit this. That's, you know, that's a different animal compared to, I got five of my buddies standing behind me. He just did 30 seconds. He just did 45. He just did 30. What the hell am I going to do?
Yeah.
And then once that beep goes off, like you said, it's time, buddy.
And it's like, the,
let's see what you got.
It's the pressure ball. And it's, you know, everybody wants to pitch a shutout.
Yeah.
But like, how are you going to do that if all you do is complain or if all you do is throw BP? Mm-hmm. The Brewers are playing tomorrow. I got baseball in my mind.
No, that's fine.
So I was throwing
it's
out
October,
a lot of
October, baby. It's the season.
It's October baseball.
But
and they're playing the Cubs, which I'm pretty fucking pissed
another
about.
Thing you that said that I loved is the do you have your rifle zero? And everybody's like, yeah. When me and you did the little stage setup for my local club here, and that was the question I asked. I loved the response from everybody, because what do we have, like 12 people when we did it
something
a couple
like
months
that.
Ago? Raise your hand if your rifle is zeroed. 12 people raise their hand.
Yep.
Raise your hand if you're willing to bet $50 that thing is zeroed. I think one guy started to raise his hand and thought about it. I was like, that's what I thought. Because I wouldn't have raised my hand.
Yeah.
Even though I think my rifle is zeroed, I wouldn't put money on it. I mean, at 50, at 50, I would.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a good question where it's just like, how confident are you in like your ability to it's the performance on demand that we've talked about a lot too, where it's like, okay, give me a quick six, or like, I'll give you one shot. Can you hit this?
Yeah.
Can you put one shot when you have to into that clay that's at 50 or 75 or 100?
Yeah.
Or even seven. Like, can you give me 10 rounds quick on five different targets at 7 yards? How fast can you do it?
Yeah.
You know, that was something that we had with the challenge bait too, where it's just like I was drag racing other folks, and I really wasn't paying attention to how other people were doing it. But I was in a competition with one of the other staff, Josh. And I mean, we were getting down into like the high 14s, low 15s. And then I pulled a 13.56 out of my ass.
Yeah.
And then I looked at like the other times that people were pulling out, and it was like 20, 22, 25. And I don't want to say that I was disappointed, but it was like, this really isn't that complicated. You can run it as many times as you want. Like, what are we doing here? Like, this is literally just like, get up here and give me 18 good quick shots at three different shooting positions.
You know what it is? I realized it was for me because I shot it twice.
Mm-hmm.
First time I shot it, it was like, I think I was like 19. And it was, like you said, there's, all right, first position through a little crack in a, you know, fake wall, one target, two target, three. Second position, you're just resting on like a sawhorse.
Yeah.
You know, just rest the rifle. One, two, three shots. Then there's a barrel laying on its side. Get down on that. One, two, three shots.
Yep.
The first time I shot it, I was just like, all right, just shoot it. Because there were some hostages in front of some shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I just shot it just calmly, you know, 19. And then I was like, all right. And then I just walked away. You know, I was like, I'll come back later. And then I come back later and Scott's showing me like, you know, hey, this guy's at this much. This guy's at this much. I was like, I trust my zero enough to where I don't really need to stop and aim. As long as the dot's on the target, I'm good. Like
red on brown, send it.
Or gold, whatever. But that's exactly what I did the second time. I was like, you see that dot on there? Just go. You know you're going to hit it. You don't have to worry about where you're. Well, I mean, granted, I was a little bit below my dot because the targets were close, but I knew where I was going to hit. I knew within what range between the circle and my dot I was going to hit.
Mm-hmm.
And I just ran it. Like, just pushed it. Go. Just pull the trigger, see what happens. And I got 13 seconds, I think. I don't remember. But so 6 seconds faster was a huge improvement on my end. And I was like, good with that.
Yeah.
You know?
I
was 14, 15 seconds. I don't remember what I was.
I think you were up there, so you must have been in the 15s.
15 maybe? Yeah. Anyways, improvement.
But it's just like the performance. The other thing,
I think, it's trusting your zero and knowing where you're going to hit. Like you said, it goes back to the how confident are you in your zero? Like, yeah, okay, you shot something at 50 yards, but like you said, where do you, all right, the target's 10 yards in front of you. Where's it going to hit? I don't know. Well, you should know. You should know where it's going to hit at 10 yards in front of you. It shouldn't be a, I don't know, we'll see what happens. I mean, but honestly, the only reason I know that is because, yeah, I zeroed at 50, I zeroed at 25, I shot at 100, I shot at, you know, 200, whatever. But the first day me and Sho got there, I'm helping Mark set up, and they're at the, you know, demo base, and there's targets 10 yards in front of you. And I was just like, let me squeeze one off real quick. And I just shot one shot, or maybe two, whatever. And then I was like, okay, I'm in between my circle and my dot. There we go. That's how, good. You know, I know that now.
Yeah.
And so I know my zero, you know, how many people knew that zeroed at 50, what they were going to shoot at 10 yards. I'm not hating on anybody. I'm just saying a little bit of work goes a long way.
Confirm at all distances.
A little bit of work goes a long way.
Yeah. Couple of things that I will call out, not as like bad behavior, but just like weird stuff that I saw.
Sons of bitches. Oh, go ahead, Paul.
People were hooking the, like, over the top of a rooftop prop. They were hooking the rifle in such a way that under recoil, it kicked the mag out.
Oh yeah, I heard about that.
So it was like on the, it was like on the mag catch, and I've never seen that before.
Now,
and
to be fair, that was a steep roof.
It was.
If you're watching the video, most rooftops are like this. This was like a cathedral rooftop.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty steep. You could do it, but like you could hook your mag and not engage that.
I didn't even know that.
That was just something that I'd never seen before. So that was a little odd. We had some ports that you had to fire through, and the fastest way to turn a good gun into a shitty gun is to put a whole bunch of crap on it that you don't need.
Yeah.
If you're shooting a competition, you probably shouldn't have like your IR device, flashlight, backup iron sights, like all of this shit out at the front of your, out at the front of your gun.
Yeah.
Cause then you can't get it in and out of ports and things like that. Now, if you're shooting a night match or something like that, like put the stuff on there that you have to shoot it for. But like everybody complains that like, oh, AKs, you know, their forends are so big and out front and all this kind of stuff. They're really not. People just bolt a whole bunch of shit to them, and then they kind of suck afterwards.
I always find,
why is my gun so heavy?
The first 4 to 6 inches from your front sight post shouldn't have shit on it.
Yeah,
in a competition, because you're gonna put that barrel into something. If your gun with your fucking handguard is 3 inches wide, you're putting that thing in something that's 4 inches wide in a competition. So don't, you don't need your flashlight if you're shooting between the hours of 8 a.m. and 5 p.m.
Yes. That's,
get it off of there.
A couple other things that I saw, a lot of people like resting their like, so like on behind you, you've got the Unrivaled brakes that are on there.
Yeah.
And you've got the new one for the 74 style combo block. I forget the thread pitch that's on there.
24 by 1.5.
24 by 1.5.
Yeah.
People would rest, like you see the kind of like the fat portion behind like the break,
yeah,
like comp portion, people were resting that on stuff, which that'll torque you off
too. Yeah, you'll be like sending shit high.
Yeah, if you're really leaning into that, I saw a lot of that. A lot of people shooting suppressed where they were resting on the suppressor, which will potentially give you a baffle strike and blow your suppressor up, and also curve it high. So there was just some stuff that like you probably only see at a match that was coming out. But like at that night event, I was walking around, I've got a 11.5 inch like SBR AR. And I was like, why is this thing so fucking heavy? And it's because I had all the shit bolted onto it with a can. And I was just kind of like, why do I have a 3X on here? Like the flip magnifier, why do I have that on here? Like I can't use that under night vision.
Yeah.
So like there's just, it caused me to kind of pause and reevaluate some of the rifles that I have and some of the setups that I have, because like, yeah, heavy guns shoot better, but you kind of also need them to like function and like work through stuff. So there were some oddities that kind of went on there that I saw. But nothing, I'm trying to think of like other gear that I saw that people were running. A lot of people were like, you don't have any mags in your body. A lot of people were still like running around with chest rigs. If you don't have to have any mags with you, why run a mag carrier?
Yeah.
Like just think about like what you need to carry on the stage. I appreciate a good LARP as much as the next guy.
Right.
Like, I don't think that you need to have a full combat loadout to shoot Thunder. Like, I don't think that you need 210 rounds on you.
Yeah.
You can. Like, that's fine if that's, like, what your end goal is.
Good for the Gram is good for the Gander, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, a lot of guys shooting in plates, which we don't have an armored division, but it's like, hey, if that's what you kind of want to do, that's cool.
Yeah.
Like, again, not going to yuck anybody's yum. Like, it's your match. You can kind of shoot it the way that you want to. But I did think that it was very interesting to kind of see a lot of the gear that a lot of people bring out to this. Not as many muzzle brakes as I thought that there were going to be. Like, I think I only saw like 3 Unrivaleds.
Yeah.
So really not that many that were out there. Not as many JMAC breaks as I had seen in years past, like the 4C or like the Slim 4C and things like that. Like, there were a couple that were out there, but like mostly like flash hiders, I would say, were like on the front of people's rifles, which is different than what it has been in years past.
Yeah.
Issue wise,
yeah,
a lot of double feeds.
Yeah.
Like a ton of double
feeds. And that, my friends, is why I do not bring my 5.56 WBP with the CNC trigger to competition. I might bring my KP9 out for night vision fun because I know that we'll do double taps and I know how to, you know.
Oh, you're talking about like the bump fires where it's like, that kind of stuff?
No, I've seen legit like, oops, bump, you know, double tap.
Yeah, I saw a lot of that too with people not being able to shoot prone. And then one guy's rifle was just like completely unsafe. And I don't know how he got through a lot of the day for that one.
Yeah.
But, no, what I'm talking about is like double feeds, meaning literally like jams.
Oh, jams. So okay.
Yeah. Lot
of those. I thought you were saying double taps. My bad.
No. But like a lot of people running bad mags.
You know what? You know why you'll get double feeds? Because you're messing around with your K&S piston. I seen, not shaming anybody. All right. There's a squad in front of me. It was the stage with, for shits and giggles, 15 targets and 20 damn hostages. All right, that stage, right?
Yeah.
This dude was having double feed. As soon as he started, just, you know, pull the trigger, rack it, dump ammo out, rack it, pull the trigger, just constantly for like first 10, 15 seconds. That was like his move. Mm-hmm. Finally, it started running, and then he just hosed everything, taking out hostages, and nobody was off limits at this stage for this guy after it started running. I thought I ran a stage piss. This dude ran super angry.
Yeah.
But after the fact, he's at the table ripping his rifle apart. And then I just overhear him. Yeah. You know, I tried tweaking this K&S piston to have it run just, you know, as light as it could. And then, you know, I'm like, yeah, that's why I didn't run anything with gas, adjustable gas.
Yeah.
Cause adjustable gas, I love it. Don't get me wrong. I have many a K&S piston. There are so many variables that will mess with your gas systems. It could be the weather. It could be the ammo you're using. You could switch ammo because that happened to me 2 Thunders ago. I was sighting everything in and running everything with, actually, I got some right here, some Wolf, right? Mm-hmm. Some military. And then that was the year I switched to Tella, and it was different. Like the Wolf ran different than the Tella, and my gun was not feeding it. And so I had to, you know, give it a couple clicks. But it's this shit like that I didn't want to happen to me this year. I didn't want any variables with my gas, so I ran just straight pistons, nothing goofy, because it could be foggy out, it could be a little bit colder, it could be a little bit hotter, it could be humid, and
we had some really big temperature variations too, where like when you started shooting in the morning it could be mid-50s.
Oh yeah.
And then by the afternoon we were kind of in the high 70s.
Yeah.
So I mean there were some differences that went on there too, but I think you're absolutely right with the K&S. I think that a lot of parts have really kind of just like filtered out into like everybody who runs an AK.
Yeah.
Is just like, I'll get a K&S because it makes it shoot softer.
Yeah.
It's kind of the wrong reason to get a K&S in my opinion.
The reason, I mean, yeah, but no. But I mean, that's why I got them. I mean, it's to have adjustable gas, right? It just bleeds your gas off. But most people will tune it to where they think, okay, they'll turn it all the way closed, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have it all the way closed. And then they'll just start click, 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 shoot, click, 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 shoot. Oh, it didn't feed. One click back, it feeds. I'm good. No, dude, you give it like 2 or 3 more clicks.
Yeah, you gotta.
You don't do really that one click past feed. I've made that mistake. And then, like I said, it's like I've shoot anything from, you know, winter KCON to where it's 4 degrees to it's 100 degrees, you know, midsummer somewhere. And you're going to have to mess with that K&S piston because it ain't going to shoot the same.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you don't go one. I go like four clicks maybe past when it starts to cycle. I'm ride the thin line.
I'm kind of the same way too. So for me, the reason why I would say like don't get a K&S to have it shoot softer is like you still have to put some gas into it.
Yeah.
And like one of my rifles super overgassed where like I'm hucking brass like 50 yards.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, just putting a K&S in that closed all the way was enough where it's just kind of like,
oh yeah, you can do that.
Now I'm not like hucking brass all the way over there, but I still get the reliability of the AK.
Yeah. I mean, just installing it cuts the gas down. You don't even have to open it, like you said.
Yeah. I will. You got to check on your K&Ss. Like if you start to put some serious rounds through them.
Yeah.
Like you gotta make sure because, and there's kind of no way to witness mark them, but like, I do believe that sometimes they start to loosen up a little bit.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it.
And then start to play around on you.
I mean, it's like working on a fucking car. It needs proper maintenance. I mean, eventually your shocks are going to go out on your car from just hitting too many potholes. I mean, it's going to take so much abuse before something starts to go, I'm done here.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, some other things, bad mags, which is, there's kind of no excuse for that. I'm sorry. Dude.
Not in today's world. And I seen a lot of 5.56 out there. There was a lot of people shooting 5.56.
Yeah, it was probably 50-50.
Yeah. But and when it comes to 5.56, there's 4 years ago. Yeah, okay, you had, you know, but like you say many a time before, Paul, we live in the golden age of magazine selection right now. And we do. But that's why also I don't fuck around like that. I have 3 Bakelites that I use for competition. That's it. Yeah, I have like new mags. Yeah, I have this fancy, you know, 40. What the hell is this? The AC Unity. I've got those fancy, you know, long boy like Bulgarians
and all that kind of stuff.
But I am not using that in a competition because I have 3 Bakelites that I use, and I've always used these 3 Bakelites. They always work, and I'm not rolling the dice on. I just got this new 40 rounder because I did that last year and it fucked me, Paul. I did that last year and I'm not doing it again.
But also if you've got a bad mag, huck it.
Yeah, get it out of here.
I just don't. Oh, it's a training mag. No, it will find its way into your bag and then it will screw you when you least expect.
But it cost me $15.
Cool.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, cool. Like that's
get rid
that's
of it. Just, give it to your friend.
Yeah,
give it to just, Brandon.
That's just kind of the price of doing this stuff. Oh, I won't get into that. But a lot of people, more so this year, I almost felt like, showed up and their guns just failed.
Yeah.
Like, you just
failed. I heard of a couple of them. Brandon's gun went down. I seen there's another guy on our squad.
We had a lot of broken firing pins. We had stuck bolts on Mosins. We had a couple of we had one where the trigger spring failed. We had some slam fires. We had some
broken trigger pin is like my worst nightmare in a competition. Granted, it ain't gonna take long to swap it out if it happens, but I don't carry an extra one. I'm always worried it's gonna happen.
I was surprised at how many people where I was like, this, why would you shoot this?
Yeah.
Like this, it doesn't make sense. And I'm not trying to rag on anybody, but like, why not just get like a quality gun? Like it's not like a quality rifle is completely unobtainium right now.
Right.
Like you can get a parts kit and get that built. There's a lot of reputable builders that are out there right now.
If you have a rifle, okay, that can't, it goes back to the car thing. It's proper maintenance. Like,
yeah,
I don't like taking my, all right. Like I said, went to the range a few times last week. Right. Right now I don't clean. Really, I give my guns a once over, and that's just me running a boar snake through it, wiping the old grease out, putting new grease in. That's what I do. I deep clean like this time of year.
Yeah,
like I'll put shit, you know, I'll soak parts, I'll go through shit, I'll really clean them out, re-grease them up, and then I'm ready to go. But like you got to look at shit every now and then. Like this thing, this 103, mm-hmm. I have inspected that thing thoroughly all the time because I'm like, this thing, something's going to go.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's got some miles on it. Something's going to go. And like I said, I don't have a firing pin for that. My firing pin would have took a shit on that thing this last weekend. I'd have been, oh, cool. Yeah, well, I guess I'm not shooting that. So, but like, give it a once over, man. You know, just if you can't find or at least tune your thing up to shoot, what was the round count? 350?
300? Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Come on, man. What are we doing here?
Yeah.
And it's like, I might even trust a PSA to do that.
Yeah, I would. I saw a lot of GF3s.
Yeah.
And I mean there's some that are out there that have some serious round counts.
I mean, like our boy Logan, right? No.
Yeah.
That's his name. Yeah. He had a Visca. He's not running
tons
anymore.
Of Viscas out there.
Now he's got a WBP now, but he ran a Visca for like I think first 3 years I knew him.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked. And I'm not condoning anybody go buy one. But man, proper maintenance, proper maintenance.
It's so hard with those because it's just like, okay, confirmation bias. But then online, there's also a ton of people that are having issues with them. And not Viscas, but even like PSAs.
You know what's crazy, though? Not to cut you off, but you say it like this. Okay, online, there's a ton of people having problems with their PSAs. You don't have people online in a chat room giving a thumbs up for every time their PSA is fine.
Right.
You only hear from the people that it's bad. Yeah. So you're like, I was just in a chat and there was 10 people in there saying their, you know, PSA took a shit. But where's the other people saying, you know what? Mine still works.
You
don't get those comments.
But I will say that like when you listen to somebody who like can actually like break down like the rivet patterns and like the tech package that goes into some of them.
Yeah.
Like from that, it's like, okay, I can tell that like you're setting yourself up for potential problems with these.
Would we know anybody like that?
For what?
That breaks rifles down and lets you know how they're built and if it's correct and if it'll last.
Isn't that 26?
Have we talked to anybody like that? Oh yeah, M26 Lemmer grenade will let you know about that. M26
Lemmer grenade that I'm talking about.
Yeah, he knows all about that shit. Let him know. He'll let you know. What am I talking about?
You don't even have to ask him. He'll tell you.
Oh yeah, believe me. There's a video up and he's telling you.
But I mean, overall, like just to kind of finish out the Thunder portion of it, I think great match. And I know that it was kind of shitting on some folks at the end here, but like,
no, man, you weren't shitting on people. It's constructive criticism, honestly.
I told people there, I was like, I want you to finish this stage and I want you to have a great time. The person between what I want and that is you.
Yeah.
Like, you're the one, like, I will help you, but like, let me, like, if I'm calling corrections for like where you're hitting at, like if I call right, that's where you're hitting, not move to the right.
Yeah.
And I tell people that, or the other thing that kind of burns
I've heard people bitch about that too. Like you saying left. And I'm like, that's where you're hitting.
Yeah. I can only call out where you hit, not where you should go. Yeah. And I tell people that, but the other thing too, that I saw a lot of is like people would just make up what they think the stage directions are going to be because they're watching like the squad in front of them shoot. And then they're just like, oh, you have to go over here. Yeah, you can totally go do that. And it's like, well, no, wait for the stage brief.
Yeah.
And like find out for yourself what it actually is. Because there were a lot of people where they were like, oh, I thought it was this and we had to go through here and all that. Like you kind of have to be the main player in your own video game.
Yeah.
Like you can't just like don't trust your buddies. Like if you have questions, go talk to the ROs. Like don't listen to the other people that you're shooting against. Unless you trust them. Also, one guy got really, really fucked because he was just like, oh, I need a couple extra mags. And his buddy was like, oh yeah, here you go. And then he's trying to get it in. And his buddy's like, yeah, those mags don't work in your gun. And I was like, what the hell are we doing here? Like, you need to go get different friends.
Yeah.
Like, before he would, now it was the right ammo.
Was he already running the stage, though?
Yeah, he was on the stage.
Oh, God.
Literally, he gets out there and he's like, dude, what the fuck's wrong with this? And his buddy's just like, oh, yeah, my mags don't work in your gun.
But you can use them.
It was literally, what's that? Did you ever see the old Pink Panther movie?
With Peter Sellers? A while ago, yeah.
There, it's towards the end, and he walks into this hotel, And he goes, hey, can I pet the dog? No, he goes, hey, does your dog bite? And the guy behind the counter goes, no, my dog doesn't bite. And he leans down and the dog bites him. And he goes, I thought you said your dog doesn't bite. And he goes, yeah, that's not my dog.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, no, that's not like, hey, can I use your mags? You can, but they won't work in your rifle.
Yeah.
It's like that next step where it's just like, yeah, you can use my mags. And then he's out there and he's like, oh yeah, they won't work.
Yeah.
But like, feel free to use them. why would you set somebody who's like your friend up for that?
Yeah.
And it wasn't like he was like laughing or like they were having a, like, yeah. And the guy was like his first competition. I was like, hey man, you should like, we're going to because it was literally like the load and make ready portion of it. So I was like, throw those away. Like, do you have a couple of mags here? And he was like, yeah. And I called one of the other ROs over and I was like, can you just like load mags for him? So then he doesn't have to borrow his buddies and get like fucked on this. He was like, yeah, I can do that. But that was the other thing that just stood out to me. Cause I was like, dude, go get different friends. Cause I can't believe that this guy just did this to you.
The guy was trying to win, man.
I guess. Well, that was the guy that I think he wound up winning the award for, like, your gun's going to blow up.
Oh, the hell was that?
Ticking Time Bomb Award?
Yeah, Ticking Time Bomb Award.
Yeah, which yeah. I kind of like. But he won that 2 years in a row.
He's gaming it, dude.
He had a barrel split last year. Jeez. Not like, oh, it's separated from the receiver. Like, the barrel developed a crack and split down the length of the barrel.
Good Lord.
I don't know how something like that happens. Oh, it was from a kit build.
Oh, well.
Okay.
Original barrel.
Like, how did we get here?
Yeah.
That's what I want to know. How did we arrive here?
Well, like I said, Paul, I thought it was a fantastic stage or fantastic match. And for some reason you're listening, be on the lookout for next year because it is a fantastic event. It's awesome.
We will I'll be doing there. It again for sure. The only thing is I can't tell you when it's going to be. But
be on the lookout.
Hopefully,
I'm sure we'll be talking about it.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be kind of the same time frame. Like September's pretty good.
Hell yeah, works for me. And I just want to give a shout out before we end this to my guy. What did I say, Steve Bemis, right?
Yes.
Yeah, good old Steve Bemis. That's my guy. He's just some older fellow who's been at Thunder ever since I've been there, and he always has kind words to say to me, and he's a good dude. And he sent me some pictures via email that he took of me and my homies at the competition.
Hell and yeah.
Steve, I don't know if you listen to this. I don't know if you watch this, but I appreciate seeing you every year, buddy. You're a good guy. But, Paul, you got anything else about how wonderful Thunder on the Tundra was or anything else that's on your mind?
What's with everybody where they're talking like 545 is coming back?
I don't think it is.
It's not coming back.
I've even heard people still on the, well, Palmetto is supposed to be making it. I'm like, where have you been? That's like, no. They're done with that.
Yeah, Palmetto gave up. I don't even think Palmetto makes 76239 anymore.
I think they did, and it was such dog shit that they were like, yeah, we're out.
Because, I mean, it's, hold on. I'm just jumping on their website.
I'm not right now. 100%, but I'm pretty sure they're not doing the 76. What was that shit they made? The Soviet arms ammo or something like that?
Oh, no, they're still making it.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
I heard it wasn't that good.
47 cents around.
Well, Paul, if we're talking ammo here,
we got to bring it up.
I am a teleman at heart, yeah. Because I don't know, like I said all the time, I've been shooting it for years. It's never malfunctioned. It's always reliable. It's always available, and it's always affordable, ladies and gentlemen. That's Teleimpex ammo.
Save some green by shooting some green.
There you go. Yeah.
What is it? Do not go to teleimpacts.com.
Yeah, don't use this code.
Put 1,000 rounds of ammo into your card. Do not use Savage 25 at checkout.
Because it will not do anything for you.
It won't do anything for you.
Nothing.
It won't work out.
It's a running gag. Ha, ha.
Have you ever seen the movie Grease?
Absolutely.
Where John Travolta turns to her, don't make me laugh. Ha. Ha, 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 ha. He does it like the diner or something like that. That just always just gets me.
Yeah.
Because it's so fucking stupid.
Well, that movie was when I first seen it when I was younger, I was like, all right, because like sounds weird, but I was a fan of some musicals when I was younger because my mom watched a lot of them.
Yeah.
But
nothing wrong with that.
That movie, I was like, okay, this movie's not terrible. It's a little dated for me as a young man. But once that car flew off into the sky at the end, I'm like, wait a minute. Why is that car flying off into the sky? This movie seemed semi-believable up until then.
Up until that point in time.
Yeah.
I think it's because they died.
That's whatever. I've heard that online. People say that. Like in the funhouse.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. I truly believe that that's actually what happened.
That's weird. Well, they weren't in the second episode.
There's a Grease 2?
Yeah. You didn't know this?
Is it greasier?
It's, I think the only person that's in it is the broad who was the beauty school dropout. The one with the squeaky voice. And like,
oh, yeah.
But it's that's all about, motorcycles now. It's not about hot rods.
That is one of the all-time movies where it's like, what are these 40-year-olds doing pretending to be high schoolers?
Yeah, I actually saw something on TikTok the other day. I was telling everybody's age, how old they were in Grease. And I was like, good Lord, some of them were in their 30s.
Okay, I got to look this up quick. Hold on.
Like, especially like Belmudo. That dude wasn't in high school at all. I think he was like early 30s.
I think that's the guy where he's got hair like mine. Okay, Danny Zuko's 18. However, John Travolta was 23.
Believable.
So that's Sandy, 17 or 18 in Grease. 29? Okay.
Oh, yeah. That's Olivia Newton-John, ladies and gentlemen.
It is. Betty Rizzo, 18. She was played by 33-year-old Stockard Channing.
Yeah.
One of the all-time names. Kanicki. 17, 18.
Got a hickey from Kanicki.
He was 26 at the time. Was he in Wings?
I don't know.
He might have been in Wings. Can't remember that. Marty...
Maraschino. 17.
She was played by 21-year-old. Ooh, 18-year-old Sonny. 31. Yeah. Michael Tucci? Like Stanley? Older brother of Stanley? Pink-haired lady members, Frenchie, 17 or 18. She was 26. Goofy T-Bird, 17 or 18, was actually 27.
You got to get the Belmudo, dude. How old was Belmudo?
Belmudo. Putsie was... Oh, he was 20. Okay. Belmudo. Here we go.
Hit me.
Okay, he was 30.
Yeah, all right.
But that's a rough 30. Okay, not...
That was a rough 30, 30, dude.
Yeah, being 30 in, like, 1975...
Yeah, you looked like you were 50. You looked ready for 50, retirement.
Yeah, you're ready...
That's like dudes in the 80s that were, like, 25, looked like they've, you know, been working the railroad for years.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was before the invention of sunscreen and anti-smoking ads.
Yeah, no shit.
I get
complimented for how young people think I am, and I'm grateful for that. Thank you very much.
I thought we were the same age for the longest time. We kind of are.
Me too, because you're smart. And I'm like, this guy's been around. And I'm like, holy shit, he's young.
It's the hair. Cha-Cha, who was supposed to be 17 in the movie, was 29 at the time.
Yeah.
A lot of smoky eyes here. A lot of smoky eyes. But yeah, who was the one that really, there was one guy that looks really rough in the movie.
It's Belmudo, dude. I'm telling you.
Belmudo looks that way, but no, it's the Sonny Lattieri.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's one where they're on the stands doing the like, tell me more
bit of it. Yeah.
When he's coming down there, it's like, this is a 40-year-old man.
He's gonna hit it.
Because when he's stepping, when he's stepping down, it's like, I can see the knee pain.
Yeah.
Like that is not an 18-year-old knee pain.
And this was, you know, before like Ben Gay was a thing, you know, he was just suffering through it.
No, Preparation H had just been invented too. Yeah. So I mean they were slathering that thing on everything. They didn't know what it worked for.
Yeah. They were putting Robitussin on it.
Robo. Oh god, the Robo.
But before we go one more time, I just want to show everybody my coin.
They were super cool. I would also not to squeeze on it too hard, but having a little challenge bay off to the side where then it's like not just tied to like how you shot the entire match, but it's literally just like one thing to like go.
It gives you a chance to
recognize a couple more people. I think it was pretty nice.
It gives you a chance to, you know, hold your head up high on, you know, I shot like shit, but I got this challenge coin.
Yeah, because literally you could suck the entire rest of the day, but it's like, hey, for one thing that you could shoot it a couple of times, like get somewhat decent at it. You know,
I liked it. I really liked that.
It was worth it. I think Scott did a great job designing it too. So I was really happy with the way that it turned out.
Well, Paul, we're at a minute 39. It's 9:40. I should have been in bed a while ago. I don't know if I'm going to work because I have back pain from messing with kettlebells.
Bengay! Yeah. Yeah. Don't make me get the icy hot.
Dude, if anybody hasn't swung a 30-pound kettlebell in their life and they decided it was a time to go into the gym and start doing kettlebell swings, take it easy.
I got mine right here.
You got a kettlebell?
Yeah, I got it right here. See?
Oh, yeah. Well, how heavy is that?
25.
Yeah, be careful with that thing.
Be careful with that. Deadly weapons.
Dude, you start doing about 50 kettlebell swings with that, and you're like, this didn't even do anything. And about 10 hours later in the day, you're like, tight. My back is tight. That's what happened to me yesterday.
Oh, one of the funniest things just before we go is making the guys drag race push-ups and sit-ups at the end to try to win the Krebs handguards. That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
That's probably one of my favorite things at Thunder is where, like, you're kind of getting ready to, like, present all the awards and things, and then you're just, like, hucking mags over walls. Wait, and how crazy everybody goes for that, I think it's pretty fun.
Oh, wait.
Hold on. What's his
quarter pounder doing?
What's his double quarter pounder cheese doing in my pocket?
Yeah. Oh, Paul, if there's anybody who is awesome at announcing and giving out awards and being on the microphone, it is you, my friend.
Well, hey, I appreciate that because I felt like I kind of fucked it up a little bit. Somebody asked me to do crowd work and did the classic, say, where are you from?
Yeah.
That's my hometown.
That's my hometown. Dude, say. That was awesome.
Oh, you're from Sheboygan? It's my hometown. Where are you from? Madison? Say, that's my hometown. Where are you from? Anchorage, Alaska? Wild. That's my hometown.
You did a great job, Paul.
Thanks, man.
And I loved every minute of it.
All right. Well, that was our last match, really, for the year, outside of the one that you're putting on next week, which I think we're just going to kind of work and get some more people addicted into this thing.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully I can get some people addicted, and hopefully these older guys that are in charge of this range. I'm a now certified board member trustee or whatever the hell they called
Congratulations on your recent promotion.
I guess. I don't know. All I know, it means I can run for office, and I don't want any of that responsibility. But hopefully I can get something going at this range, and we can really start doing some good rifle stuff here as well.
Run for president and then install yourself as a dictator.
Just take over.
Just take over.
Just be like, this is my new cabinet. You guys are all fired. And just outlaw revolvers and all types of shit.
Like, you can only have more than 10 round mags.
Yeah. Yeah. Bolt action 22s are not allowed on this range anymore. Just wipe out all the old dudes. Anyways, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening and thank you for watching, either or whatever you're doing to enjoy this fantastic podcast that me and Paul do, that so many of you have told us that you enjoy, and we greatly appreciate it wholeheartedly. So please leave a comment, like, share, subscribe, tell a friend, tell a homie, tell an ammo. You know the deal. And might be a while before we see you. Might not be. Who knows?
We'll be around.
We'll be around. Love you guys. Have a good one. See you later.
Shoot ready.
Yep.
Shoot ready. Stand by. Shoot ready. Stand by.
Shoot it. Are you ready? Stand by.
Shoot ready. Stand by.